Okay, listen up, because I'm about to blow your mind, and I have not made a podcast episode in a very long time. Believe it or not, I have recorded about 10 that I have not uploaded, because I just don't want to muddy the waters of all of the episodes that I already have uploaded, right? I've kind of said all the important stuff, and if I'm uploading a new episode every single week, it's just going to create too much clutter. And I'm also doing other things with my life these days. And I probably will upload some of the other ones. There's a couple really good ones, but I recorded them so long ago that I don't remember what they said. So I have to go listen to them again to make sure I still like them. But I did want to talk about something today that was a burning question for me when I was a new mold avoider. And I think a lot of people are probably wondering this. And here goes the part that blows your mind. I am still doing extreme mold avoidance, but I'm not doing extreme mold avoidance because I really don't do extreme mold avoidance anymore at all. I spend 90% of my time in a regular house. I live in locations that I couldn't have ever tolerated before. So what do I mean? What do I mean I'm still doing extreme mold avoidance? Well, when you get to the end of this process, you realize that there's only one kind of mold avoidance. There's only one kind of mold avoidance. And that kind is to do what we call adequate mold avoidance, which is enough mold avoidance to have the desired effect, right? It kind of is mind-blowing because I used to think that when I got through with this process, I could just sort of go do whatever I want, which is sort of true, but it's not for the reasons that we think it's true. So when you're in intensification, you have to be a lot more clear to detox. The body is really broken and it requires a higher threshold of being clear. It's kind of a binary switch. You either are clear enough or you aren't clear enough to detox. That's where all the mold doctors get it wrong. They think you can just be sort of clear, take some binders, and you're off to the races. Depending on how sick you are, you may need to be very clear. This is where the term, the proverbial term, tent in the desert mold avoidance came from. It doesn't necessarily mean a literal tent in the desert. It can mean that, but it more so is just a picture. A picture's worth a thousand words of adequate mold avoidance for somebody who was very, very sick, right? So when I was about 2 years into mold avoidance and I was wishing I was further along than I really was, I remember telling one of my mentors, hey, I can't wait to go back and live in Tahoe. Tahoe is where I came from. And I was like, I'm just going to make it work. And the mentor was like, no, you can't do that. That's not how it works. You'll either be able to tolerate it or you won't. And that was interesting. You know, that's the kind of statement that you can think about for a long time. You can either tolerate it or you won't. So I want to talk about a few variables that come into play here that sort of shed light on how this works. So the first variable is that obviously you heal, you become healthier, and you have a higher tolerance. The second variable is that you just get better at doing mold avoidance. So you can do more with less effort, less stress. You pick better places to live. You learn where the wind is. You learn what kind of clothes to wear. All these other little mold avoidance skills, right? So you become more skilled. You become more healthy. And the third one is you become more willing to do what it takes to stay on the power curve, even if you are off the power curve sometimes, right? So you have a plan. You say, okay, if I can tolerate this location 70 to 80% of the time, then I know what I need to do, where I need to go for the rest of the time. And this can be surprisingly difficult to manage when you're new. It sounds easy, but it's actually there. I wouldn't say difficult. It's surprisingly logistical. Okay, I'll say logistical, right? By the way, if you're new to mold avoidance, this doesn't really apply to you because when you're new, you sort of always need to be as clear as possible or you feel really, really bad. I'm not trying to push people a round peg into a square hole, but I was thinking about this today because I can still get really slammed. And when I do get really slammed, I don't ignore it. I don't say, oh, well, I'm just healed now. I don't have to worry about it. It's a threshold. I obey my threshold. I do adequate mold avoidance, right? I do enough mold avoidance for what I need. And as those variables sort of pass each other on the bar graph, if you picture like a dot plot with lines going through, it gets easier. Health goes up, skills go up, and willingness to do what it takes and to know what you need to do to keep yourself healthy all sort of result in a better outcome for you. This is also one of the reasons why I always drive home the point of sensitivity versus reactivity. I'm not going to pound it here, but you need to go listen to me drone on about sensitivity versus reactivity. It's all my recent podcast episodes. It's in my premium subscription-only podcast episodes. It's everywhere. I would say the reason for that is because sensitivity versus reactivity is the one mold avoidance skill or concept that I think, that I personally think, becomes much more relevant later on in healing. And the main reason for that is because we are trying to expose ourselves to more of a normal lifestyle later on in healing. We're going to take more hits. We're going to have to experience more sensations of coming across toxins that we don't want to come across, rather than what we do in intensification, which is mostly to just stay as clear as possible. Why do we stay as clear as possible in intensification? Well, I shouldn't say as clear as possible. I should say adequately clear. And as a mentor aptly said, if you don't get clear enough, you'll stay like this forever, which was my experience in intensification. I didn't get clear enough and I started to stay like this forever, meaning stay sick. And so I had to get more clear, more clear, more clear. To get over the hump. And during that time, sensitivity versus reactivity, it didn't really come into play. And now it's interesting now that I'm thinking about this, because it came into play a little bit. All the Karens are going to come out of the woods and yell at me and say that I am not being precise here. Okay, fine. I'm being approximate. But it didn't really come into play very much, because now that I think about it, when you're in intensification, you sort of never feel clear enough, right? Like, that's the whole definition of intensification, is people are just running and running and going around and they're trying to get more and more clear. It's just kind of part of the process, right? So that whole concept of sensitivity versus reactivity doesn't really apply as much. It still applies to some degree. But when you're going back, living in civilization, more of a normal life, it applies much, much more, at least to me. I will put a caveat, a disclaimer for the Karens who want to say that I'm wrong, whatever. Okay, Karen, for me, it applies much more later in recovery. But here's the interesting thing, and this is why one of my mentors taught, I'm glad I'm getting to some good ground here. Some of the reasons why I haven't uploaded my past podcasts are because I never quite break out into like full on like mental traction about what I'm saying, but I feel like I'm about to break out a little bit. The interesting thing here is one of my mentors used to say, don't cut corners, build up those mold avoidance skills. You're going to need them later. And this is so true, because a lot of what I do now is the same stuff I did in early mold avoidance. It's the same stuff. It's just adjusted for my higher tolerance level. I don't need as much mold avoidance to do adequate mold avoidance, but all of the skills are still there. Now, what do I mean when I say don't cut corners, right? Now, you can get into a lot of debate about what is better, doing mold avoidance in hotels, tents, Airbnbs. I talked to someone recently who was doing mold avoidance very successfully as a flight attendant, which actually kind of makes sense. If you think about it, flight attendants can stay at different hotels. They aren't locked into one location. They're on a metal airplane, whatever. It worked for her. So who am I to say it's wrong? Airbnbs, hotels, flight attendants. You guys have heard me tell the story about someone who's flipping houses and making money while they do mold avoidance. Camping. I don't want to debate it, you guys. I'm too old, too tired, to been on this community too long to get in the mud with the Karens. I'm not talking about mud wrestling with Karens. Get your mind out of the gutter. But I'm just not interested in debating that. But whatever it looks like to not cut corners early on because, and I'm quoting a mentor, you're going to need those skills later. Now, to me, a couple of the skills that really, really helped, or I should say not skills, a couple of the practices that really, really helped me to not cut corners personally, and I'll talk about two things, were A, making flexibility effortless. And this is something I talk about a lot, right? Making flexibility effortless. This means you don't lock yourself in financially to any living situation that you can't easily escape from, unless you're super rich and you can just buy a mansion and then rent it out if you don't want it. But most of us are not super rich. So making flexibility effortless. And then number two, keeping belongings to a minimum during mold avoidance, which also sort of goes along with making flexibility effortless. And that'll allow you to sort of push the limits and experiment, try different locations. The magic of this hit me when a mentor had recommended to me that I get a rental car. Now, just for the record here, just so you guys can see that I'm human too, and I'm not everything to everyone, I did not really like the idea or the practice of doing mold avoidance in a rental car. That doesn't mean that it wouldn't work for someone else, but it just didn't end up being what I like. But I did it one time. I got a rental car and I got some cheap Walmart clothes and I was sent on some assignments to go sense different toxins and learn what they feel like. And it turned out I used to resist those assignments or homework or, you know, field trips. This was like 5 years ago, by the way. I don't do this anymore. But by the time a few weeks passed, I loved it. And I was begging to be sent on more assignments because it was working to teach me mold avoidance skills. It was working, right? It was actually working. So one of the things that the rental car did was it opened up my eyes to how easy mold avoidance can be and how easy learning mold avoidance skills can be if you make flexibility effortless and if you keep belongings down to a minimum. Because all of a sudden, I wasn't really worried about cross-contamination or about my vehicle or about my clothes. I could just experiment, go turn in the rental car if I want, go take a shower, throw away $20 worth of clothes. Now, is that the only way to do it? No, Karen. You can do it other ways, okay? I'm not going to go into all of them. You can do mold avoidance different ways. I do believe in following your intuition to some degree on what type of mold avoidance will work for you. Like, for example, we almost never did hotel mold avoidance, but I know other people who did hotel mold avoidance and had tremendous success, right? Why did we pick RVs, truck, camper shell, and the way that we did it? Was it because it was right? No. It was because it worked for me. And a lot of it does come down to personality, finances, aptitude, you know, different kinds of brain dysfunction when you're really sick and what things you could handle. See, I kind of had OCD when I was really sick. And the idea of checking hotels over and over and over again, it did not appeal to me. Now, does that mean it doesn't work for someone else? Maybe it's fine. I liked the idea of learning how to tow a trailer one time, learning how it works, the laws, the hookups, this and that. You learn it, you know it, and then needing to dump my RV and trade it in every few months, a year, whatever. We've had 7 different RVs. It worked for us, right? You can't argue with somebody who it worked for. So the point here is not to debate which kind of mold avoidance is best. The point here is just to not cut corners because you're going to need those skills later. But I just kind of find it fascinating that I still think of myself as doing extreme mold avoidance, but it's just not extreme anymore. You know, it would be kind of like the guy who, have you guys ever been to those restaurants where there's someone like, you know, someone at the table that the chef comes to your table and he cooks everything in front of you and he throws up the vegetables in the air and chops them and the fire's going everywhere? I think it's called Benihana. I think I used to go there when I was a kid. And the chef is just throwing shrimp and throwing steak and throwing everything all over the place. And you're like, wow, that's extreme. That's amazing. You know, no normal person could do that, right? But to him, it's just normal. He's like, oh, I could do this in my sleep. It's easy. So he didn't change. The activity didn't change. What changed is he just got better at it. And I think, and in our case as mold avoiders, our reactivity goes down over time so we can have more exposure. But I guess the reason that this is so interesting to me is because I didn't really know this when I was starting off. I thought that there would be some change in direction, some change in how it's done and how it's practiced. And I got hints from my mentors that that actually was not true. And I did eventually listen to those hints, but something in me was like, nah, there's just going to be something that changes, you know, at some point down the road, you know, it's going to be different. But it really isn't different. It's just different degrees, different levels to it. And I just wanted to share that with you guys because I think it's interesting to hear from someone who's already sort of been there, done that. And if you guys are panicking because you think it's going to be so hard, it really isn't, because, you know, someone, you know, I'll give you an extreme example. This isn't me. I was too sick for this, but someone who, let's say someone is totally healthy their whole life. They made it till 30 years old. They never were in mold. They were healthy. They were strong as a horse. They were an Olympic athlete. Let's say they move into a moldy house for 2 months, right? They're probably not going to be that sick, right? They could probably do mold avoidance, adequate mold avoidance, much easier than you and I could, right? They might just be able to move out of the house, maybe get their clothes dry cleaned, whatever, you know, maybe get a new couch. I'm just making this up. And they're fine. You know, if you told that person, and then let's say they did that and they got fully recovered, they went back to their life, they were totally fine. If you told that person, hey, I think you should go do tent in the desert mold avoidance, you would be an idiot, right? Why? Because they don't need to do more than adequate mold avoidance, right? Like, not everybody needs to do extreme mold avoidance. So that's what I'm talking about here. I am now that guy, that Olympic athlete who only needs to do a couple little things. Am I exaggerating? Yes, I am exaggerating to make a point. Obviously, I was sick since childhood. I was fully disabled. I do have to do more mold avoidance, but it's closer to that than it used to be, right? So I can still be doing the same thing in different degrees, even in a more easy and mild way. Like that guy that Olympic athlete who I just talked about, he's not doing anything wrong. He is doing extreme mold avoidance. It's just the extremeness isn't very extreme because he doesn't need it. And this is where I become very fascinated by the legitimacy of this approach, because it's just one approach. You know, it's such a solid approach that it works no matter what phase you're in. You just do adequate mold avoidance. And the mind-blowing part of it for normal people who don't really understand this, who are listening to this podcast and this is their first podcast and they're like, what is this all about? The mind-blowing part of it, and this is another thing that I quote my mentor on. I don't have any original thoughts, by the way, guys. All I do is quote mentors. And some people like use that against me and they're like, he's just a parrot. He just quotes mentors. No, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. Hey guys, I'm too busy raising my kids and mountain biking and stuff to want to reinvent the wheel, right? There's no glory in reinventing the wheel. If you saw your neighbor out there and he was like, hey man, check out my invention. I just invented a wheel. Nobody would be proud of that. Nobody would be like, good job, you got the Nobel Prize, you invented a wheel. So I do not mind if people tell me that I'm a parrot and that, you know, I'm just repeating what other people said. That's great. That means that this approach is tried and true. It means it's worth repeating. It means people have already figured it out, so you don't have to pretend to be a genius and reinvent the wheel yourself. It's cool. It's great that this has already been done, right? Like if you walk into architecture class and you're going to be a new architect and someone already figured out what size metal trusses and beams need to go up on the ceiling to keep the ceiling from collapsing and you don't need to figure that out, that's fine, right? There's no glory in being like, well, actually, I'm going to redesign that, right? Nah, it's stupid. Let's not be stupid, right? Rule number one in life is don't be stupid. So I don't mind being taught and teaching what I've learned. In fact, to me, that's what makes this approach so brilliant, is that there's actually a rhyme and a reason for it, right? There's not a rhyme and a reason in alternative medicine. If you have Lyme disease or chronic fatigue syndrome and you go around in alternative medicine and talk to a bunch of doctors, you're going to have to go to 20 doctors and get 20 different answers. I promise you, you already know this,
right? It's hormones. It's this. You need oxidative therapies. You need antioxidants. You need this or that, right? That's when you know, after you go to 20 doctors, you spend $1,000 on each, you've spent $20,000, you come home with 20 different treatments, and they all only work for 20 hours, and then you have to go do it again. That's when you scratch your head and you go, maybe they don't know what's wrong with me, right? So I actually think it's a positive thing to have a lineage or a heritage or a hierarchy of knowledge and mold avoidance that can be passed down. And it's actually something that works and that was already figured out a long time ago. This is why I'm such I want to say asshole, but that's too strong of a word, in my group. And I don't allow a lot of off-topic conversations in my Facebook mold avoidance group, because I don't want people's ideas and thoughts. You're not welcome to share in my group. You're not, it's not a town square where I just want everyone to be like, this is how I feel today. I ate eggs for breakfast. Oh my gosh, eggs must be the cure. No, I want to teach and allow people who understand this approach, who we call experienced mold avoiders, to teach this approach. That's all I'm here for. That's the only reason I'm sticking around this community, because I think this approach is worth being taught. I didn't invent it. I didn't come up with it. I think it's worth being taught. Anyway, back to the concluding remarks that I wanted to make. I was going to say the remarkable, mind-blowing thing about this approach that most people miss and that really makes it different from what you would hear from a mold doctor or what you would hear. Because a lot of mold doctors will say you should do mold avoidance, right? They just won't say, they don't understand what adequate mold avoidance is for very sick people. So they'll say things like, yeah, you need to get an ERMI or a HERTSMI or this, you know, Petri dish test. And okay, your house is moldy, so move across the street. This other apartment seems a lot better. You should be doing fine there. And then when the person isn't doing fine there, they say, oh, it must be something else. And they move on. What makes this approach special, in my opinion, again, Karen, you might disagree with me, but in my opinion, what makes this approach special is that we acknowledge that for some very sick people, adequate mold avoidance ends up being very extreme in the beginning. I'll repeat that. We acknowledge that for very sick people, adequate mold avoidance may be very extreme for some very sick people in the beginning. And there's another way to say this. It's that, and again, this is not my original phrase. Another way to say this is that if some mold avoidance is good, more is better in cases of very sick people. Now, why is that unusual? It's very, 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 very unusual and important. And here's why. Because in 99.9% of cases in alternative medicine, people know that it doesn't work and that if they do more, it also won't work. And so people are not used to this idea. It's why most people never discover mold avoidance, in my opinion. Because if you take vitamin D and it doesn't make your Lyme disease and chronic fatigue syndrome get better, and your doctor says, oh, try to take more, it doesn't work, usually. If you do an herb or a supplement or an antibiotic and your doctor says, oh, well, we better do more, it doesn't work usually. You hear the horror stories of Lyme patients that are on 7 different antibiotics for 7 years and they have nothing to show for it. They're sicker than ever, right? So here's the sentence to listen to. This is the crux of the matter. This is the magic. This is what makes it different. This is what makes it special. This is also what makes it hard to understand. If a very sick person moves across the street to an apartment that has a better test score than the place they came from, and they get 10% better, but not all the way better, it is very easy to mistakenly think that they just shouldn't do more mold avoidance, that they did as much as they can, it's gotten them as far as they can go, and now it's time to move on to something else, right? That's how we live our lives in alternative medicine. And that's not our fault. That's the way it's just been handed down to us, because nothing works, right? We do Dr. A, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, it gets us 10% better. We do Dr. B, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, it gets us 10% better. This is where they take the wrong turn and they miss the fact that, as I've said before in other podcast episodes, mold avoidance is the one that goes all the way to the bottom of the rabbit hole. It's the one that falls all the way down the rabbit hole to the bottom. And if some mold avoidance is good, more is better. And a lot more is a lot better. Not unnecessarily. You don't have to do more than adequate. But the guy who gets, this is why, like, if you do a sabbatical, as described in learning materials for mold avoidance. I have a, if you go all the way back to the beginning of my mold podcast, the very first episode, you might have to scroll through the pages and get to the very first free episode is about a sabbatical. And so if you don't know what it is, go listen to that. If you do a mold avoidance sabbatical and you experience 10% of results, it usually means that if you do more mold avoidance, you'll get 20%, 50%, 90%, 100%. Mold avoidance is the thing that goes all the way to the bottom of the rabbit hole. And it's so sad and so easy to miss this. You talk to people and you say, how are you doing? And they say, I moved out of my moldy house 3 months ago and I moved to a different house and I'm doing a lot better, but I'm still really sick. And you're like, oh, well, did you consider you might need to do even more mold avoidance? And they're like, nah, I did a test. I'm like, well, yeah, did you know that the tests are, this is already like established wisdom that the tests are not very accurate. Whether you're testing your body or your house, they don't tell you what your individual threshold is. And some people's individual threshold is 1,000 times more compromised, meaning you need 1,000 times more mold avoidance than someone else to get to break through that threshold and experience results. They go, ah, well, my doctor didn't really say that, so I'm doing this, this, and this. It's back to the choose your own adventure model, right? Which doctor did you pick? Oh, I liked his website. Which supplement did you pick? Oh, I walked up and down the aisles of my local health food store, I felt empowered. I picked the one that made the most sense to me. It's the choose your own adventure. And literally they were on the precipice of winning the lottery if they had just realized that if some is good, more is better, and that this hole goes all the way to the bottom of the rabbit hole. It's like having a winning lottery ticket in your car and you just lose it and you forget to check the numbers. And the next night on the news, they say the numbers are 17, 24, 93, 111. And that was your ticket. And it was a $5 million lottery and you just lost the lottery ticket, right? Like, and that's actually a good analogy. On a lottery ticket, if some numbers are good, more are better, right? If you match up a certain number of the numbers, you might get a $100,000 prize. But if you match up all the numbers, it could be a $5 million prize. So what if you only checked the first four numbers out of six and you won the $100,000 and you didn't go check the rest of the numbers? Pretty stupid, right? That's the crux of the matter. That's the paradigm shift in mold avoidance. That is so important in this approach. It is that we are not saying anything all that different from what doctors are saying. They say mold is harmful. They say you have to do an ERMI test. They say you have to remediate. They say you have to take binders. They say kind of that mold is bad. But the distinguishing feature of this style of mold avoidance is that we know that the body can get so badly beat up by mold that you can be in such a compromised state that it would blow your mind and blow the minds of all of the doctors. And if you can manage to get clear enough, which is quite a bit different than what doctors will tell you is clear enough, if you can manage to get clear enough of indoor mold toxins, outdoor mold supertoxins, don't forget the outdoor toxins, that's another distinguishing factor here. If you can get clear enough, you will have a binary switch flip on that's probably never flipped on before in your life, or it's been many, many years, and the body starts fixing itself intrinsically, automatically. You don't do anything. You don't have to take the right binders. You don't have to do anything. The body just goes, oh, okay. The burden has been lifted enough, right? And that's the magic and the distinguishing factor. I wish more people knew about that. So in closing, this episode has given a little bit to people I just addressed, those who don't know what the binary switch is and the miracle, the crux of mold avoidance, if some is good, more is better. And I've also tried to give a little nugget to you guys who are deeper in the process and you're wondering what it looks like later. I shed a little bit of light on that. Might not be perfect. I don't think about this stuff very often anymore. When I listen to my old episodes, I often am like, wow, you did a really good job explaining that, Brian, but I don't think I really do that great of a job anymore, which is great because I don't really think about this stuff anymore. But once in a while, I will pop in here and drop some information that I think is useful on my podcast. And the other advice that I would have is if you're new to the podcast, go ahead and listen to a lot of the older episodes.
In some podcasts, you would never want to listen to the older episodes because they're irrelevant, like a news podcast, right? Nobody really wants to go listen to a CNN news podcast from 2019 about, you know, world politics, right? Because it's not the same anymore. It's different now. I mean, unless you're doing like a history project or you're a history buff, but most of us would turn on a 5-year-old news podcast and we would be like, this is irrelevant. That's not the way my podcast is. It's very linear, and you can sort of follow the steps and the journey that I went through by listening to the older episodes. I really want to emphasize that. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up here at 30 minutes. Thank you guys for listening. I will put in my two disclaimers here. Number one, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. If you're going to do anything with supplements, medications, mold avoidance, make sure you get a doctor's permission first, a real licensed doctor. And number two, the new disclaimer that I start to use these days is that I do not claim credit or invention or originality of any of this content. I don't want people to think that I do claim any credit. I'm just doing the best I can as a non-professional layperson to explain what it was like for me and some insights that I've gained that I hope are worth hearing. Thanks for listening.